Yes, and welcome to Animal Voices. In this program, Animal Voices, we seek to enlighten the general public on animal-related issues. We do this by presenting and producing radio programs that deliver a message that inspires people to improve the lives of animals. Chief Seattle said, "All living things upon the earth are a part of the earth. All living things upon the earth have always been a part of the earth. All living things upon the earth will forever be a part of the earth. For in truth, all that is alive upon the earth is the earth itself. All is one. We are the earth, and we are indivisible from ourselves. All life is interdependent. This is the continuum of life." And those were the wise words of Chief Seattle. Yes, it's Animal Voices on CFR Radio 102.7 FM in Vancouver, affectionately known as Co-op Radio, your commercial-free and community-based and sponsored radio station. My name is Carl Loskin, and in the control room and the technician today is Alan Jensen. And we have also our co-host, Marge Adams. Well, Marge Adams, it's nearly the end of the year, but before you're going to tell us a little bit about the end of the year, we're going to be telling you that at the half hour shortly, we'll also be speaking with Carly Lovett, who 2 years ago started the Vegetarian Club at the Moscrop Road School in Burnaby. So, Marge, you have some wise words regarding the end of the year?
Yes, I do. I have 10, actually, resolutions, New Year's resolutions from the Vancouver Humane Society on how you can help animals through your own resolutions. Would you like me to tell a few right now, Carl?
Fire away.
Thank you. Now, this comes from Bruce Passmore, who is the Animal Welfare Coordinator for the Vancouver Humane Society. And he suggests that you might resolve to quit smoking or go on a diet or something of that nature, which would help you, certainly, but it wouldn't help the animals. If you have an animal resolution, then you're going to be doing something for yourself and for the animals. So here's resolution number one from Bruce. Don't buy eggs from caged hens. Does that sound familiar?
Yes, it does.
And now, if you choose to buy eggs at all, buy certified organic eggs.
What a good idea.
And they are guaranteed to be free range and to have the highest welfare standards. So that's a number one resolution. If you are looking for a companion animal, adopt a needy creature from a local shelter. For example, the BCSPCA has animals available, and they would not be from puppy mills, for example. They would be from maybe strays or people who had to give up their animals for some reason, so that you would be helping an animal who desperately needs a home, which would be a real positive. A third resolution, and that's all I'm going to tell you right now, eat less meat, starting with one meat-free dinner a week. Wonderful way to do it, easy way to do it. Or if you want to go vegetarian right off the bat, that's fine too, but it's kind of a difficult thing to do. And remember, you would be helping the environment more by giving up meat than you would if you stopped driving your Hummer. So that's something to bear in mind.
I'll park the Hummer and become a vegan. And thank you, Marge. You know, also exciting program today, because at the half-hour mark today, we're going to have Ingrid Newkirk on our show. She was the founder of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. And she says there's three things you should do in life. And that's, number one is be kind, number two is be kind, and number three is be kind. So, you know, it's been a difficult year in many ways, where we see the struggle that animals are still confined, 10 billion animals slaughtered for their flesh each year. But, you know, sometimes we see a ray of hope, and some of the things we've done this year, the film festival, Co-op Radio continues, and we had many people support supporting Co-op Radio because they listen to Animal Voices. But you know, one of the people we had on our show was Gloria Groh, and she has a project called R&R. And this week, yesterday, she sent me an email, and she also is in New Hampshire, and she said that the House and Senate has passed the Chimp Haven In-Home Act, and that is and that was signed by the president, and it means that all the chimpanzees that have been in laboratories will then, after they've done their stint at laboratories, will then be retired and not go back. So it's a small concession, but you know what? Each little concession is moving towards the greater goal of freedom of cruelty from animals. And so to recognize Gloria's wonderful victory here, that's Neves, there's a sanctuary for chimpanzees in Montreal, we're going to play Dr. Jane Goodall with Dana Lyons. Is a wonderful CD called Circle the World, and she's going to tell us the story about the chimpanzee Jojo, and then we're going to have Carly Lovett on our program. Over to you, Alan.
I want to tell the story of Jojo. He was born in Africa. When he was about 2 years old, his mother was shot, which is how you catch young chimpanzees in the wild. And he was shipped to North America, where for about 15 years, he lived by himself in a small, old-fashioned cage with a cement floor and iron bars. And then a new zoo director decided to build a large enclosure, the biggest in North America. He built the enclosure. It was surrounded by a moat filled with water because chimpanzees don't swim. They got 19 other chimpanzees, and then gradually they introduced them to each other, which is always a slow business. But finally it was done, and they were released into the enclosure. It was fine for a bit, and then one of the new young males challenged the senior male. Well, the senior male was Jojo, and he'd lived alone all these years. He didn't know anything about chimp behavior. He hadn't had an opportunity to learn. So he was terrified by this young male swaggering and bristling in front of him. And he ran into the water. He didn't know anything about water except it's something you drink in a cup. And he was so frightened that he managed to climb over the railing that had been built to stop the chimps drowning in the deep water beyond. Three times he came up gasping for air, and then he was gone. On the far shore of the moat was a little group of people, and there was a keeper there who knew that Jojo could be dangerous, that he weighed 130 pounds. And there was a man there who visits the zoo just one day a year with his family, his wife and his three little girls. And he jumped in, even though the keeper grabbed hold of him and told him he would be killed. He had to swim under the water, feeling with his hands until he touched Jojo's inert body, somehow got this 130 pound dead weight over his shoulder, somehow got back over that barrier. And he could feel tiny movements. He knew that Jojo wasn't quite dead. He pushed him up onto the bank of the enclosure and turned to rejoin his slightly hysterical family. And at that point, there was a woman, and she was taking a video film. She doesn't even remember taking it. So you can hear what happened next. The people on the bank start suddenly screaming really loudly for Rick to get back, that he's in great danger, because from their higher vantage point they can see three of the big males, hair bristling, coming down to see what all this commotion's about. And at the same time, Jojo is sliding back into the water because the bank is too steep. And this piece of video is all over the place, but amazingly it steadies on Rick as he stands there with his hand on the barrier, and you see him looking up at his wife and his three little girls, and you see him looking up towards where these three male chimps are coming, and then you see him looking down at Jojo, who's just disappearing under the water. And for a moment Rick is motionless, and then he went back, and again he pushed Jojo up on the bank, and this time he stayed there in spite of everybody yelling at him. And Jojo is making very feeble efforts to catch on to a piece of tough grass. And just in time, He managed to pull himself up to where the ground is more level. And just in time, Rick gets back across that barrier. And that evening, that little piece of film was flashed across North America. And the then director of the Jane Goodall Institute saw it, and he called up Rick. He said, "Mr. Swope, that was a very brave thing you did. You must have known it was dangerous. Everybody was telling you. What made you do it?" And Rick said, "Well, you see, I happened to look into his eyes, and it was like looking into the eyes of a man. And the message was, won't anybody help me?" And that's the message that I've seen in the eyes of chimps staring out from the 5-foot by 5-foot laboratory prisons. I've seen it in the eyes of the little chimp infants sold in the African markets beside the dead bodies of their mothers. I've seen it looking out from the eyes of chimps cruelly trained for the circus. And I've seen it in the eyes of so many animals around the world, and in the eyes of little children whose parents have been killed in ethnic violence or who are caught up in gang fighting with nowhere to go. And once you've seen that look and felt it in your heart, you have to jump in and try to help. And I think my greatest reason for hope in the future is that as I travel 300 days a year around the world, more and more and more people are seeing that look, that appeal for help, feeling it in their hearts, and doing what they can to help.
Thank you, Dr. Jane Goodall, for your wonderful story. I've heard it so many times, and every time I'm moved by it. So that was from a CD called Circle the World with Dr. Jane Goodall and Dana Lyons. Well, on the line we have today a very special guest. It's Carly Lovett, who 2 years ago started the Vegetarian Club at the Moscrop Road School in Burnaby. Welcome to Animal Voices, Carly.
Hi, Carl. How are you?
Good, good. Well, did you hear that story, Dr. Jane Goodall?
Oh, no. I'm having trouble recovering.
Oh, okay. Anyway, yeah, you're at SF... You're at Simon Fraser University now, mm-hmm. and when you were at the Moscrop School, you started a vegetarian club.
I did, yeah.
So maybe you can tell us what inspired you to do that.
Well, I had a math teacher who was vegan, and we were talking about how many other students we knew that were vegetarian and thinking about it, and we decided that there was really a need for something like that, and we found that there was when we started doing it.
So I'm going to ask you just to speak a little bit louder and make sure that everybody can hear what wonderful things happened there at the Moscrop School. So maybe speak into it. So there were a lot of people who were interested, and of course, in the school, and so you started the organization. And when you made the suggestion to the committees, I guess everything goes through committees at schools, what was their reaction?
They were very supportive. They didn't really know much about vegetarianism, but they liked to have diversity in their school, so they encouraged it a lot and helped us out when they could.
Right, and then the wonderful thing about starting something is, if it's been a good idea and you can prove that it's a good idea, is if it then has a life of its own. And that's exactly what's happened now, because a family member of yours is doing that now.
Yeah,
so tell us about that.
Well, I started it halfway through the year, and I was only there for few months before I graduated, and now my brother's been doing it for a year and a half now, and he's doing a really good job. He's got a lot of new members, and he seems really excited about it.
Yeah, so what actually, we'll mention his name here, Jackson Lovett. And, of course, you've also been a volunteer at the Animal Voices Film Festival.
Okay.
But what kind of functions did you have to sort of keep the interest going, and what did you do?
Well, basically, people are so interested in compassion. You can really tell when you talk to them. They just have no outlet for it, usually, especially in high school. And so in our club, we'd show videos and have potlucks and get them together and talking about it. And people really seem to latch on to that and not want to let it go. So that's how it kind of continued, I think.
So which videos did you show at your school vegetarian club?
Well, when I was there, of course, I showed Diet for New America. I showed another film from the United Kingdom. I can't remember its name. Jackson, I think he's shown Peaceable Kingdom. And quite a few others who's been doing it for a while. And some other videos, I think you got some from Carl Loskin.
Yes, thank you. And so, of course, the other thing is that if you start a vegetarian club, and we know that they have these big cafeterias at school, and we heard a few things about that cafeterias, but we also heard that there's a change in progress now. Maybe you can give us an update on that.
Yeah, I was just talking to Jackson about that. He's on the district student council, so he gets to hear about things before they happen. And the schools in our district are switching to a healthy school lunch program, where they'd be changing and thinking about more about what they're serving students, which is really important if anyone's seen what they serve at school lunches.
So were you able to make sure that there were good vegetarian options there?
Well, I think it's still in the beginning process, but I think that there will definitely be more vegetarian options.
It's a slow process, I know it, and of course it needs to go through the whole all the authorities. Mm-hmm. So you had meetings once a week, and you're at SFU now. But you've been a lifelong vegetarian.
That's right. Yeah, I was born a vegetarian, and I'm a vegan now. And like you said the other day, I'm 100% vegetable.
Well, why does that happen? I mean, how long does it take to change? I mean, do you remember what I said?
I do. It takes 7 years.
Well, you know, your body replaces itself every 7 years. I'm not a scientist, but I like those statistics. Everything, including your bones and everything, everything gets replaced in 7 years. So if you've been just a vegetarian eating veggies, fruits, nuts, and seeds, well.
Yeah. So that's what I am, fruits, nuts, and seeds.
You are fruits, nuts, and seeds. Oh, I love you. people sometimes wonder. There's many athletes we've had it who've been vegetarian and vegan. In fact, look at Dr. Ruth Heydrich. We've had her on our show. She's a triathlete, and she's in her 70s. And they have tremendous stamina. And, look at elephants. All they do is eat grass, and look how strong they are.
Yeah, and how did they get so big just being grass?
Just like you eating green grass and vegetables. Well, it's truly delightful that you so early in life understood something which many people only understand late in life. You know, and what would you say the main reasons are that people become vegan or vegetarian? And maybe you can tell us what the difference is.
Well, for me, I'd have to go off my experience becoming vegan from vegetarian. I just decided one day that there's really no need for us to eat meat or dairy. It's not required in our health or in anything but how we like the taste of it. So when you realize that, it really, for me, it took away the desire to eat those things.
And so you became a vegan then, is it?
Yeah.
Right. Now, Bruce Frederick, he's one of the chief directors of the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, mm-hmm. and he said, there's a chunk of veal in every glass of milk. Have you heard that? Gosh. Maybe you can explain it to our listeners.
Well, the veal industry comes from the dairy industry, right, because cows need to have babies to produce milk. So they've got all these babies, and what are they going to do with them? Because many of them are male. So there's an easy road to the veal industry, where people are just eating baby cows that don't really get to move around much, and they're taken away from their mothers very early on.
Yes, veal is so cruel, and they can't even scratch themselves. So tied up in pens, and of course the pigs. I mean, you've seen those videos. Once you've seen it, and some people, I always think they can see it and they know it, but they're. Habits they're slow to change. People's habits change. There's a certain dependency on certain types of food. You're not sure whether you're doing the right thing. You know, I certainly, when I became a vegetarian, I looked at my plate and there was only vegetables and some nice things on there. But, I thought, well, maybe there was something missing. But after a while, you know, I didn't feel that anymore. Hey, Marge, what do you say?
Well, I hardly agree with you. I didn't stop eating meat like a cold turkey. That's the term. No, I didn't. I came off it gradually because I was a mature adult by the time that I made that change, which was, 25 years ago now. I certainly did miss the kind of cooking I was used to doing, and you have to learn different menus, that's all. And that took me some time, and my husband went along with it beautifully, and so we both became vegetarian. But it was an effort, but well worth it, especially when you read about salmonella and all these things associated and mad cow disease and all. I don't worry about that. I just don't have it in the kitchen ever.
Now, Carly, you've also been involved with a wonderful organization called Earth Save Canada.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe you can, tell us, is that an inspiration for you? Do you go to any of their functions? Because they're not just an organization that gives information. It's a social event. They have dine-outs. They have a taste of health, a two-day veggie celebration. But what does it mean to you to be involved with Earth Save Canada? And I just want to tell our listeners, it's earthsave.ca, earthsave.ca.
Well, that's right. I've actually been a part of Earth Save for as long as I can remember. And I remember going to dine-outs as a child, and I actually think Dana Lyons was at one of them.
He was.
And that song, Cows with Guns, has been in my head probably my entire life. And it's been really important for me to be a part of an organization of vegetarian people, especially when those times when you think that you're kind of the only one out there. It's good to know who's there. And Earth Save is nice because it's sort of one of those more gentle organizations where it's more relaxed and more about food and community. If you are not tired, but need a break from activism all the time.
Well, Carly Lovett, we recognize you for starting the Vegetarian Association at the Moscrop Road School in Burnaby, and your brother Jackson, who keeps it going, and it'll go on forever for a long time. So thank you for what you've done and for what you've started. It's all these little waves that contribute towards making the lives of animals better. One step at a time, one bite at a time.
That's right.
Thank you, Carly, and all the best for the new year.
Thank you.
Do you have a resolution for the new year? Because Marge is going to be reading a few more in a few minutes. Do you have any insights into a better world?
Oh, a better world.
For yourself? Do you make New Year's resolutions?
No, I don't usually.
Oh, okay. Are you maybe going to be more appreciative of your wonderful mother, Joanne, and your father, Matt, and wonderful Jackson lying on the couch right now?
That's exactly what he's doing.
Anyway, all the best. You have a moment there, or no, no. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Carly, for being on the show, and we'll look forward to seeing you again.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. Bye for now. Yes, and you're listening to Co-op Radio, and it's Animal Voices coming to you on 102.7 FM. And many of our programs are posted on our webpage. John Pranger is our webmaster. It's a good webpage. Lots of stuff on there. Everything you'd want to know and everything you'd want to probably memorize and read over and over again. And you can even listen to probably one of these programs. But Marge, it's nearly the end of the year. And of course, next year in February, we're moving from the year of the pig to the year of the rat. We had a program about rats and how wonderful they are on Animal Voices, and you remember that. But what resolutions are going to better your world this year?
Well, I'll tell you.
Next year.
A few other suggestions. One, a very important thing to do is to have your pet spayed or neutered. Now, that's been a long campaign for the animal welfare movement, and I'm sure most of you out there have had your pet spayed or neutered. But if you haven't, please do that and resolve to do it right now. And also tell your friends to do it, because there's just so many animals that are homeless, and we need really to find residents for them rather than breeding more and more animals. Don't patronize. This is another resolution. Don't patronize animal circuses, rodeos, or other events, entertainment events, where animals are being exploited. We've made headway in that area just this year, getting certain events removed from the rodeo, and we don't have animal circuses right in the city of Vancouver. Anyway, that was dealt with some years ago. And another one, don't buy fur. This is something the fur bearer defenders have put years and years into. If you buy wild fur, then those animals have been trapped in basically leg hole traps that are so cruel, and they die slow, painful deaths. If they're domesticated, they're living in cages, which is a terrible thing to do to any wild creature. So that regardless of where the fur comes from, it's not something that you should be encouraging to carry on with. And also, if it's fur trim, very possibly it's dog or cat fur that's been imported from China. So that's something to be aware of. Now, would you like me to carry on?
We're running short of time because we've got a very special thing. Why don't you finish that off there? One more.
Okay. Switch to cruelty-free, non-animal-tested products. And you have to read the label. Actually, the SPCA has a symbol showing approved products. I'm thinking, especially cosmetics, that kind of thing. Watch what the label says regarding animal testing.
Right, cruelty-free. And yes, you're a member of the Vancouver Humane Society. They do wonderful work and such a wonderful organization to support. And Gandhi said, I have nothing new to tell you. Nonviolence and truth are as old as the hills. Well, as we said before, we have a very special program today, and that's because Ingrid Newkirk from the People for the Ethical Treatment for the Animals is with us today. And as I said, she has a wonderful presentation which will take us to the end of the program. Over to you, Alan Jensen.
In human life, which are important. The first is to be kind. The second is to be kind. And the third is to be kind. The animal rights movement is all about being honest in our dealings with others, or it should be, not just saying what's expedient or comfortable or convenient. When people say they're going to retire to go fishing, that is not a benign activity. That is hunting in the water. When we say eating meat is linked to impotence, that's true. Of course, that may not be a bad thing. And we say that cheese does cause zits, and that beer is better for you than milk. Animal rights people, of course, find it inexcusable to accept that you can treat animals badly just because they happen to be different. If you cut animals, don't they bleed? If you tickle animals, don't they giggle? We tell our children might doesn't make right, and then we turn around and throw it all out the window, all these principles like might doesn't make right, because it's convenient for us to do something different. That's why I think we should be proud that our movement is working very hard to cast aside all prejudice, all injustice, not just those injustices and prejudices that apply to our own species. There is absolutely no trick to looking back on the great injustices of our time. And by that I mean the obvious ones, the Holocaust, slavery, and condemning them. We understand that. We got that. There's no trick to going along with the status quo and not rocking the boat. The trick is always to look at what we're doing today as if we were some point in the future looking back and figure out what the oppressions and the injustices are that we're committing today and to get them out of our lives. You have to rock the boat if you want to make waves, and you have to be honest if you want change. Most people in this room understand that slavery is not over in America or in the Western world or in the world in general. The animals are today's slaves. And yet, what little pittance do they want? They don't want the right to vote. They don't need the right to do anything except have our respect for them as other nations, for that is what they are. They're not objects, they are anima, they're life, they're like us. And the greatest respect of all that we can afford them is just to leave them alone. PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, is known for doing what, to some people, are fairly outrageous things. I believe we're like Dante Rossetti, who is the old painter, who used to be chided for being told not to make a spectacle of himself. And he used to say, well, if I make a spectacle, people stare. And then I have the attention for my serious work. So forgive us, please, for all the embarrassing stunts, the crazy antics, and the stupid tricks. What we realize is that the press, God bless them, are like your cat. That if you speak seriously to them, they pay absolutely no mind. But if you waggle your finger under the door, they know it's just your finger, but they have to come over and have a look. So, we know our work's a very serious issue. Please don't ever think that we don't. But by using humor and by being provocative, we get thousands of people who would otherwise not give two hoots to take a look. And people who won't look at the gore cannot help but look at the gorgeous. Animal rights is everywhere these days, everything you pick up, and it's because people are actively working to make it so. It's not just some sort of fluke. Times are certainly changing. It used to be that milk was a sacred cow, and I don't mean that as a pun. No one thought about the mother cow. There are no retirement homes for her. She was kicked and beaten down the same ramp the beef cow goes down. And nobody thought about the connection between the veal calf and the dairy industry, that in order to have the dairy industry, you have to steal the milk that is meant for that calf. All people used to think was that milk is healthy, and it's wonderful that that has changed. You know, the latest edition of Dr. Spock's Baby and Healthcare, number one bestseller, has an apology from him in it for ever having recommended milk for children. And to add to a host of new studies, they seem to come out all the time, showing that that mucousy muck is linked to everything from childhood onset diabetes to colic, ear infections, even crib death. Last week, a study from Glasgow's Royal Hospital for Sick Children found that breastfeeding can reduce a baby's risk of childhood obesity by 30%, and we have an epidemic of childhood obesity in this country. 2 weeks ago, the medical journal The Lancet reported that cattle proteins have been found in chicken feed and actually in the tissue of chickens in supermarkets, meaning that there now is the possibility that mad cow disease in its avian form can be passed on through chicken consumption. This is in The Lancet, not an animal rights publication, but the medical journal. I absolutely adore chickens. I used to take in rescued hens and call them my girls, and they were always very special to me. They had individual personalities. They would play their sort of World Cup form of soccer with melon balls and make dust bowls for themselves to bathe in. And they would roost in the trees, and they would go out sunbathing, flapping their wings, just like people on the beach in their bikinis. And they were just full of personality, preening for the rooster, some chatty, some not. They certainly had as much personality as any dog, and probably more than some people I've met. I think I love them extra because I was really riddled with guilt that my favorite dish used to be roast chicken. And you can be cured of eating chicken if you take a ride at the end of this conference, if you're up for it, to the Purdue processing plants. That's what they call their slaughterhouses, which are just 50 miles away from here, if that. You know, most United States Department of Agriculture inspectors do not eat chicken. And if you get to know those birds, it really is such a tragedy. When someone says to me, I don't eat red meat, I always think, I wish more than anything, and I always have, that I had some little red dye to inject into those birds. Because the more people step away from eating beef, unless it's for ethical reasons, the more they start eating chicken, and the more animals are in trouble. I do talk a lot about going vegan and being vegan because everybody eats. As Peter Singer said, that most people's interaction with animals occurs 3 times a day when they sit down to eat them. And today, United States Department of Agriculture figures show that in America, people eat 1 million animals every hour. And most of those are chickens. I say vegan, I don't want to say pure vegetarian, which you could also say, because that sounds as if you have to go to church and you can't drink beer. When you're talking about veganism or anything else, I'd say don't worry if people aren't receptive. The human species isn't very bright, it just thinks it is. It has to hear the message several times. We all had to go through that. Every summer, Peter serves veggie hot dogs at ballparks and outdoor activities, and they taste pretty much like other hot dogs, I'm sure. And we give away free samples. But there are always some people who come up and they look at it and they say, yuck, vegetarian hot dogs? And what's in those things? And you say, well, vegetables, soybeans, and they say, oh, and they wrinkle their nose. And I always wonder, would they be happy if you said, oh, sorry, these are the meat ones. What's in them? Let's see, ground muscle, ear, nose skin, rectums. One day I'm going to try that. Real meat, like real leather, has a certain stench to it. I've stood on the kill floors in many slaughterhouses over the years, ones for chickens, ones for horses, for cattle, even for dogs in Taiwan. And I can only say that after those experiences, meat to me smells like hot death, because that is the smell that permeates the slaughterhouse. I can't associate it with anything edible. It conjures up memories to me of all the animals I have watched going down with their feet stuck in those clamps or being hung up by the neck. And their eyes are always wide and they are always so afraid. Dog, chicken, cow, calf. And it's always as if they look at you and they say, help me, this cannot be happening to me. They have never, I don't care what anyone in the farming industry says, those animals never expect that moment to come. It is just too horrific. If the smell of meat still smells good to you, I would say force yourself, please, and go and watch one of the films that's here of the little pigs going down the ramp to their deaths, or the little chickens looking up and seeing the man with the knife in front of them. It really is worth forcing yourself to do it. Human beings should be in awe of all the other animals. They're never greedy, They live well on the earth. They don't despoil it. They don't pollute it. They live simply. It isn't because of them that the sun is searing into the earth, bringing starvation to the peoples of Africa, that no one can drink from our waterways, that sparrows are dying throughout Europe, frogs are disappearing in South America, and penguins are found floating dead in the Antarctic. An albatross was the first to go around the world and knew that the world was round before we did, and did it without instruments. Dolphins use sonar. Ants construct boats to cross rivers. We should be in awe. Our own species has trashed the place. The supermarket has replaced all the natural food and pharmacies. The Congo is disappearing, and with it the most amazing examples of life, of foods, and of medicine. Inside those jungles are elephants, chimpanzees, monkeys, antelopes, small rodents, leopards, tree frogs, crocodiles, birds, insects, and deer. Millions and millions of them. Yet unlike our cities, their ground is rich with vegetation, the forest canopy provides shade, the rivers are clear, and the food is abundant. In 5 years, it will almost all be gone. And because we humans here have so much greed, not need, but greed, that we want more rubber, more minerals, we want more logs, more lumber, we just want more. That's what our species is defined as. We gorge ourselves on foods that cause heart attacks and strokes and cancers, and then we torment animals in laboratories in the hope of finding pills that will allow us to continue to gorge ourselves. In the animal kingdom, animals don't succumb to heart attack and cancer and stroke in these ways. They eat what nature intended, they remain healthy, they use natural medicines. Our species is so proud of having language, yet we ignore the fact that the elephant mothers talk to their babies subsonically, that means at frequencies that are too low for us to hear without instruments. And rats do the same thing. Rhinos use breathing signals as messages, and tree frogs tap out their messages on the logs. Even the tiniest little insect produces too high-pitched and too fast sounds for us to interpret. Over 1,700 different dolphin whistles have been recorded. We don't bother to record the sounds of those animals. It would be too inconvenient for us to know about. We're doing to beavers and coyotes and prairie dogs what was done to Native American human beings just a wink of an eye ago. We are destroying their land. We're seizing their families. We're poisoning and shooting them in cold blood. It is our species' failure to understand all the other species on the planet and to go into space to look for intelligent life when it's all around us that is the problem. It is our species' greed. We should be in awe of animals, and we should look to ourselves for what motivates us to carry on through life, and what our values are, and what our principles are, and what our level of understanding of others truly is. It won't be easy to change society. After 9/11, people said, "How can you care about animals?" Simple. Because compassion is not some miserly pot out of which you can only take a spoonful. Caring isn't like a few gold sovereigns bound up in a rag that you can pick out one at a time. It has to be limitless. Looking out for your baby or your friend is easy. The test of moral fiber is to stick up for those you relate to least, those you understand minimally, and those you do not think are that much like you. For them, ground zero is every single day. They are terrified, slaughtered, and in danger every minute. Humans are their terrorists. And this is about them, but it's also about us. It's about whether our hearts are big enough to look after the least of them. That's why the animal rights movement is a movement we can be proud of. I have a word for those of us who are here from our opposition. Every time we step inside a laboratory, we find what are nicely called problems. We've stopped many experiments, but we still discover monkeys with infected headworms because the researchers don't know how to affix their electrode caps. We still find mice who are being bled from the eye, rats who are having their tails or their heads cut off with scissors and just an ice cube to numb them. Can you imagine having your finger cut off and putting an ice cube on it to numb it? Every time we step inside a factory farm, we find problems. We have changed much, but we still find pigs beaten with metal rods, animals having their hoofs cut off while they're still conscious, and animals left to die of black lung and broken bones without so much as a drop of water or a painkiller every single time. And every time we look into the fur, the leather, or the wool industry, we find animals chewing off their own legs in traps, going mad in their tiny, filthy cages, left to suffer out in the fields through all winter cold and sweltering summer heat without relief. And we find them beaten, anally electrocuted, gassed, stomped to death, or shipped live to the Middle East every single time. So those of you who are sitting here from industry, who we may not recognize right off the bat, please have this in your minds. Pork isn't the other white meat. It's the remains of a dead pig. Farriers don't sell natural fabrics. They sell pieces of carcass. Cures for diseases don't depend on using animals. Only your mortgage does. As for all the false equations, your child or the dog, Hans Rusch said it best. He said, not a single child's life has been saved by a dog unless the child was drowning. It is our opposition who are the terrorists. Every one of them who does not actively work for change in the way we treat animals in the society is a terrorist. I have one more thing to say to them. Remember this. Rights movements never go away. They always get stronger. They always attract more people. And there is no point whatsoever in wasting your time fighting them, because we will grow and we will win. And that's a fact. If you don't know this area, you may not know that a little way away from here is Gallaudet College, which is the school for deaf students. And about 10 years ago, there was a significant uprising there. The deaf students wanted a deaf president, but the Board of Regents wanted them to have a hearing president. And the students, they appointed a hearing president, but the students refused to go to class. They went on strike. And the Board of Regents tried everything, but they couldn't get them to go back to school. And so in the end, the students won, and a deaf president was appointed. Well, the leader of the student revolt wrote an editorial in the Washington Post. I'll never forget it. He said, "When slaves rose up against their masters, whites weren't ready, but the slaves were. When women demanded the vote, men weren't ready, but women were. And hearing people may not be ready for us to get a deaf president, but we are ready." And I thought, you know, the people who eat sausages and buy leather furniture and go dog sledding and throw octopuses on the ice during ball games may not be ready for animal rights, but the animals are ready. They've been ready. They are ready, and we had better not let them down. Means the hard thing is that we, each and every one of us, has to do our part. We can't sit in the wings and feel sad. You're either in or you're out. Just choose something, anything, and do it. And do it unfailingly and unfalteringly. None of us is alone, even if you think you are in the middle of nowhere. You are not. There is always somewhere, someone there waiting for you to step up to the plate and do something. Anyway, even if you don't find that person, you can do it by yourself. You can, and you must, because the animals depend on you. They depend on each and every one of us. And most important things have been done because just one person cared. Please, don't ever be afraid of seeming radical. All the best people in history have been radical. And it will always be radical to say or do X or Y unless someone starts saying and doing X and Y. We don't face firing squads, lifetime prison sentences or the gas chambers for saying what's on our minds and in our hearts. We won't lose our lives if we speak out against animal wrongs wherever we see them, but the animals do lose theirs if we don't, so we must. If you arrived at this conference eating animals, I hope, please, that you will pledge to be veg now. If you arrived veg, please remember that there is a piece of a veal calf in every glass of milk, and it takes 22 hours for a hen to lay an egg kept in constant light. And please go vegan. Back when George Bernard Shaw was being given an award many, many, many years ago, they said, George, it's okay. If you come to the banquet, we promise that it'll all be vegetarian. And he said, I can't imagine anything worse than 3,000 people all chewing celery at the same time. Well, we've gone beyond that, and today you do not have to be limited to celery or anything else. We have every tasty food the world has to offer. Right here, we have Ethiopian, Chinese, Thai, Indian, you name it. And then, of course, all the meat taste-alikes, from tofutti cuties to soy sausage crumbles. There is no food taste that you can't find that comes cruelty-free. Cook for others. See this burn? I'm learning to do that still. Deliver tasty dishes to others at work. When you have a gift to give, please consider a recipe book, a cookbook. Teach. Years ago, I only knew one other vegetarian, or one vegetarian. I was waffly, and she would call me up, and she would tell me all about pig batteries and what hens went through and what horror she had seen that day. And afterwards, she would apologize, and she would say, I'm so sorry. I know it's upsetting. And I have said over the years to her, thank you, because often you kept that steak sandwich off my plate. I am so glad that you said what you said. Lobby your council members, work with your legislators if that's your talent. Please find your talents. Meet with your school board if you're a parent, a teacher, or a student. If you haven't read Peter Singer's Animal Liberation, please read it and buy a copy for a friend. Everything we must do, we must pass along. Please read Charles Patterson's Eternal Treblinka and put a copy in a library somewhere. Please don't just spay your own dogs and cats, but go out into a low-income area and knock. Choose a block and go door to door and spay every dog and cat on that block. We can't have a no-kill nation unless we have a no-birth nation. And please don't be depressed. Don't dwell on the big picture, because that's more than any sensitive person can ever endure. Remember all we've achieved in history, all the changes we've made in this very small time of animal rights activity. Even animal welfare is little more than 100 years old. In 1880s, dogs were being drowned in the Hudson River to keep the streets clean. It was the 1920s when Dreyse began the test on rabbits' eyes. In the 1960s, not so long ago, despite pneumonia, Hubert Humphrey got up from his sick bed and went to the Senate floor to argue for the first Humane Slaughter Act, which wasn't a very all-encompassing act, but was the most important historical event. In 1966, after an expose in Life magazine, Congress passed the very first law providing any protection whatsoever to animals in laboratories. In 1981, Peter won the first conviction of an animal experimenter in the history of the United States. In 1988, Jennifer Graham sued her school in California for the right not to dissect. In 2000, Peter won the first conviction ever of a factory farmer for cruelty to animals. In 2001, Senator Robert Byrd addressed the Senate to admonish the nation for the appalling treatment of animals in the meat industry. And just this week, the Food Marketing Institute came out with the pitiful, but still a step forward, first ever guidelines for reducing the suffering of animals on factory farms and in slaughterhouses. The achievement of reform shows that while we have our heads in the clouds and we have high ideals and we will not back away from them, we have our feet firmly planted in the ground. Reforms move a society, very importantly, from A to B, from B to C, from C to D. It's very hard to take a nation that, or a world that is built on seeing animals as nothing more than hamburgers, handbags, cheap burger alarms, tools for research, and move them from A to Z. But as we keep whittling away, we will move them finally from R to Z. There is no hidden agenda. If anybody wonders about, oh, what's this with all these reforms, you can hear us clearly. Our goal is total animal liberation and the day when everyone believes that animals are not ours to eat, not ours to wear, not ours to experiment, and not ours for entertainment or any other exploitive purpose. Please, I add my voices to the others, is let's be kind to one another. No one is anyone else. It will take all sorts of different styles and personalities and tactics to achieve our goal. From the most conservative to the most radical, we are all needed, we are all vital, we are all precious. Let's be glad that each one of us is doing something, anything, to achieve animal liberation. If you'd like to use Peter as a resource, please do. We copyright nothing. We have guides to almost everything, free videos to borrow, free packs to give to friends and co-workers. And please go to our booth. You can leave a message for the March of Dimes. You can tell us your hopes and your dreams, and maybe we can help some people with them and make the world a kinder place. Thank you for all you do for animals. You are all truly precious. And I am so happy to see so many of you with so much energy in the room. Take care of yourselves. You're all we've got.
Yes, and that was Ingrid Newkirk speaking out for the animals with a presentation called Be Kind. And over to you, Marge.
Yes, I want to wish everyone a happy 2008. And with this reminder as a resolution, how about do something kind for animals every day? Take your neighbor's dog for a walk. Write a letter to the editor supporting animals. Hug your cat. Something every day. Make the world better for animals.
Make a donation to your favorite animal charity. So, yes, and many of our programs are posted on our webpage, animalvoices.org. And we'll end off with another wonderful quote, which says that something wonderful you can do for yourself and all life on Earth is to eat a diet of organic, unprocessed foods that are free of animal products. So keep to that, and you'll have a happy new year, and the animals will be all the better for it. Because Gandhi said, I have nothing new to tell you. Nonviolence and truth are as old as the hills. Thank you for listening to Animal Voices.
And I'd like to mention also that as well as animalvoices.org, you can go to Co-op Radio's website, which is coopradio.org. And as far as I know, the archive system on Co-op Radio is up and running, you can hear any of the programs that you hear on Co-op Radio on the archive system there. The animalvoices.org website will take a few days to get today's program up and running, but check it out, and you'll be able to find it and hear Ingrid Newkirk again. And in just about 1 minute, we are going to be hearing the next Radio Eco Shock.